Welcome to the Progressive Radio News Hour. I'm Steve Lindner. My guest today is James Petras. Jim is a regular on the program. I'm sure listeners know him well. He's a Latin American expert, and he writes on so much more. His newest article today, he wrote about the war going on in Washington. You know, the fiscal cliff, the grand bargain. They want to ruin Social Security. They want to ruin all the other major benefits that people get and have been relying on for so many years. And Jim has written so much, not only about Latin America, but the Middle East and so many other topics. Jim, I welcome you. I'll let you jump in wherever you wish to at first.
Oh, thank you, Steve. Thank you for the invitation. You mentioned the Social Security issue, and I think it's extremely important. It's a social insurance policy, though the propagandists for the White House and Wall Street keep calling it entitlement program, as if it's some kind of a handout or some privileged payment, when in fact it's paying back on the insurance policy that many people contribute for over 50, some of them 60 years, in terms of deductions from their pay. So it's a paid social insurance. And we can start from that. The second thing is that they claim that it's unsustainable, and therefore we should raise the age, cut back the payments, provide some means tests to make sure people really need it, etc. And that's a fraud. Social Security would be overflowing with funds if the Treasury Department of the various administrations, Republicans and Democrats, weren't robbing it for the past 30 years. That is, the money that we pay for Social Security only is used to cover current payments. There's no savings, even though there's a surplus. The surplus goes into the Treasury and spent on wars, bailouts for Wall Street, etc. So if those 30 years of IOUs, the Treasury Department gives the Social Security Administration credit for an IOUs, IOUs that have never been paid, and there's no plans to pay them. And so it's been a wholesale robbery of, I would say, close to $2 trillion at least over the past 30 years. So if they cash in those IOUs, we'll have money till the 22nd century. But furthermore, the adjustment, I just got a note on 2013's 1.9%. That's what they claim the inflation rate. That's rubbish, because that index they use excludes drugs, medicine, any educational expenses, vegetables, fruit, and other groceries, plus gasoline. How do old people get to go any place without a car? And those items that are excluded would double the rate to something like 3.8% of a rate of inflation, and the adjustment would be twice as high as it is proposed in the calculation of the administration. And the worst thing of all, Steve...
Can I add one thing very quickly?
Yes, right ahead.
If you go back 30 years, the way inflation and GDP and all the rest used to be calculated, economist John Williams reverse engineers the numbers, and he calculates what the official numbers should be if you base it on the early 1980s model. He says inflation is 9%. 9%? I mean, we'd be in a panic if they ever published numbers like that. He says real unemployment is just a tick under 23%. GDP is negative, and he goes on and on and on and on. In other words, they cooked the books, Jim, to make all the numbers look better than they really are, so they don't have to give Social Security recipients a big increase every year because it's pegged to inflation. They'd much rather give us 1 or 2% than give us 9%. The dirty game goes on. It's very, very ugly, Jim. And Republicans and Democrats, a bipartisan conspiracy against millions of people in the country.
Well, the other question, they try to pit the make it into a demographic problem. They say the population is aging, and that's the reason that Social Security funds are becoming unsustainable. But that problem can easily be mended. They have a cap currently at about $110,000, and beyond that, billionaires and millionaires pay the same amount, approximately $10,000 a year. But if the cap was lifted and millionaires and billionaires had to pay that 10% on their total income, we would be getting close to at least $100,000 from the millionaires. And on the billionaires, you calculated, I figured about $100 million a year. And that would fund Social Security in its present form for the next two centuries and allow for progressive reforms, because these swindlers in Washington forget that we have a great majority of working people who pay in for 50 years and never collect, because they're in hazardous occupations. They don't live to reach 65. Now they're going to raise it to 67, according to the actuary figures. That means another 370,000 people will die before they can collect Social Security. And these people, I can guarantee you, are not CEOs. They're coal miners. They're people that work in agriculture. They're spray painters, people in extractive industries, factory workers that work around solvents, chemicals, disproportionately black people, and people that are in their early 60s, people that don't have that are in heavy work, they're more prone to injuries and death. And now, with employers cutting out health benefits, lots more workers are going to be getting sick, and because they don't have coverage, they're not going to the doctor, they're going to be dying earlier. And then the most remarkable figure of all is the declining mortality rate for women, rural white women. They've lost 4 years in their life expectancy in just the last 10 years. So they're going to be working till they die, along with a host of working class occupations. Meanwhile, the well-to-do, the wealthy people living into their 80s, who pay a smaller proportion of their earnings than any worker, they'll be collecting till they die in their late 80s or mid 80s. So this whole social security system has been set up first to deny workers coverage by various devices, and secondly, to give a disproportionate share of what the workers paid in to the CEOs who don't even need it.
Jim, it is a real scam. I have an article written on the fiscal cliff. I've written about it before. I haven't gotten it out yet because other things were more pressing. I will get it out in the next day or two or three. I'll get it in. There are so many things going on. Whatever jumps up at me and hits me between the eyes is usually what I want to write about on any given day. But I will get it out. I mean, in a word, it's a real scam. It's a ripoff. And there's so much more involved.
And Steve, there are some reforms, positive reforms, that could change the whole picture. As I mentioned, taking the cap off of Social Security payments for the well-to-do, people making over $110,000. The second thing would be to make payments progressive. That is, instead of paying a flat fee of 10%, as you get richer, you pay 12, 14, or 15%. If that isn't enough, we can have a sales tax on financial transactions, a 1% tax on the selling and buying of stocks, just like you pay a sales tax when you go into a restaurant or a hardware store, etc. Why do the rich get exempted from paying a sales tax? Now, if you add on the additional income, you can not only cover current Social Security, but you can change the law to reduce the age at which you collect Social Security for people in hazardous occupations. Now, in England, since 1837, the official government statistics carries out studies on the life expectancy for all sorts of occupation. That's over 180 years ago they've been collecting. Yet in the United States, we don't have that kind of serious nationwide studies. We have studies on mortality rates for particular occupations, particular gender groups, and particular regions, but we don't have annual national service census studies on differential mortality rates and adjusting the age for retirement according to the risks and the life expectancy in each occupational group. That's not a complicated thing to do. And since they have all kinds of surveys to sell us underwear and suits and soaps and shampoos, there clearly could be a government-funded survey according to occupations and cut it by gender, race, ethnicity, etc., but mainly by social class and occupation. And this would allow us to adjust the Social Security payments and entry age according to people that have paid 50 years, I mentioned that repeatedly, 50 years of Social Security payments, and then they could have time to spend some leisure time with their grandchildren. They could go fishing or hunting or walking their dogs and have some time to enjoy their life outside of the arduous work. The bottom line is this, Steve. The people that work the hardest, dirtiest, risk-prone jobs are the people that collect the least amount of Social Security.
How true, Jim. How absolutely true. And I like to put it by saying the most disadvantaged people in the country, most of all, the middle class also, but the most disadvantaged, the many millions of people in America that are either impoverished or they're very close on the border of poverty. And these are the people who will be hit the hardest, and they'll do it in nefarious ways, ways that some people won't even realize, like raising the retirement age 2 years. That literally takes a chunk.
Raising the Medicare age 2 years, I see that's on the table for the grand bargain.
Oh, they're
going to
do it, Jim. I think it's already
so if you don't have medical coverage and you're 64 or 65 years old, what's the likelihood you can purchase it? Where's the likelihood you'll still have a job that gives you health coverage? That's the question. So it's a death sentence. It's a death sentence, raising the age of Medicare, and that combined with raising the age for Social Security means that we'll probably get many more than the 360,000 people who will die between 65 and 67 will probably get double that.
Oh, you will get that. But even the survivors will get less income than they would have gotten otherwise. They will literally have a chunk of cash that they badly need, and Social Security was proved many years ago to be the number one benefit people get, and it's cashing in on their own insurance policy that they pay premiums on, but it's the number one reason why many, many seniors stay out of poverty, and they want to hammer it, and that's step one, and step two is to privatize it, and step three probably is after the Wall Street crooks milk every dollar they can out of it. You know, how many billions or trillions they'll take out of it. They want to junk the whole system, or maybe keep it as a 401k program. And 401ks have been proved to be far less effective for people than their ordinary Social Security. In other words, you put your money in Wall Street's grubby hands, and they're going to steal every buck they can from you. It's what they always do. It's what they dream of doing with Social Security, Medicare as well. They want to privatize that. Obama wants to get rid of public pensions. They want to knock Medicaid on its rear end, and then eventually get rid of that. Same thing with food stamps. Same thing with the entire social safety net. And what do they want to do with the money? They want to hand trillions more dollars to corporations. They want to wage more permanent wars. I mean, that's the agenda. Fund the Pentagon, fund the warmongers, fund all the corporate crooks, especially the bankers. That's the dirty game. And make ordinary people, especially poor people, pay for it. And if Americans don't get angry enough and do something to stop them, they're going to rob you blind. Rob you blind. They'll destroy the middle class. They're literally turning America into a third world country. It is no joke. I don't make those kind of statements lightly. That's exactly what the plan is. And the dirty deal is Republicans and Democrats are absolutely in lockstep on this. The only disagreement is the fine details. But the absolute policy is firm. Both parties want it. Obama is as firm on this as Romney would have been. You called him right, Jim. You called him a con man before he ever took office.
I think we should go into this issue of the proposals floating around to privatize Social Security and what's involved in that. First of all, right off the top, the fund managers, presumably you put your money into a Fidelity or one of these other and equity investment funds, they take 3 or 5% whether your stock or your portfolio goes up or down. So right off the bat, you're 3% or 5% out of pocket. That means in order for you to collect any advantage, to increase your assets for retirement, you have to score anywhere from 6 to 10%. That's a very hard target for any investor, even the so-called aces. The second thing, and this is equally important, you mentioned thievery. Every single day, every single week, we read about swindles. We read about Barclays. We read about UBS. We read about Citibank. We read about Goldman Sachs and how they put investors, especially retail investors, but they even screw each other, they put them onto a stock to pump it up, and then they sell their own investments out, and then when the stock drops, those of us who trusted them are the losers. So we got to deal with the fact that there's crime in the suites. That's been going on. It's not just a pejorative ejaculation on our part saying Wall Street's a bunch of criminals. No. All you have to do is pick up the Financial Times or Wall Street Journal each and every day, and there's these huge rip-offs by traders, by the senior executives, and all of them prejudice either the taxpayer or the retail investors, the people that are trying to squirrel away a few dollars for their pensions. And how can, with their track record regarding swindles and manipulation of stock, how anybody could believe that the private sector is more trustworthy to manage funds than the Social Security Administration? It's beyond me.
Well, Jim, in my Wall Street book that goes back to last year, I had a chapter in it on how the Wall Street bankers manipulate all the markets. They take them up, they take them down, they make money going up, they make money going down. They literally rip off people, and the government authorized this. This went on time immemorial, ever since there was a stock market, when J.P. Morgan was around, maybe before he was around. I forget the origination of Wall Street, but it goes back well over a century, maybe the end of the 19th century. But it became really rampant during the 1980s when it was literally authorized by presidential executive order that you literally can do this, and the administration was involved and the Treasury was involved, and literally Wall Street has license literally to steal. They literally can have a business model based on fraud because the government sanctions it. And who are the people who pay the price? The innocent suckers who don't realize that they're stealing stealing your money. And that's the name of their game, and that's their business model. And when an insider goes public once in a very great while, there was one I wrote about. He left Goldman Sachs because of the way they cheated their customers, and he went public to some degree about it. And he used some very frank language on what these people call their customers. I forget some of the words he used. But basically, he said, they're suckers. They're easy marks. I mean, you know, we put them in our pocket, and we take anything we want. We tell them to go and take a right turn, and we take a left turn, and we profit, and they lose. I mean, that's basically the kind of comments this insider made. So the whole game is rigged. When you see the stock market go up or down, or anything go up or down, it's not real. These big boys are manipulating it. They're making it go up and down.
Yes, Steve, and you know, when we look at the so-called budget deficit, and they always put the blame on what they call entitlement programs, what we call social insurance. They say this is really draining. There's two real easy answers to that. One is to cut the military budget and invasion of foreign countries. U.S. has its armada off the shore of Syria and Iran. They have preparations to engage in a naval blockade of China. And it runs over $800 billion, and that's official. And then we add in Homeland Security and all these spy agencies that are spying on 312 million Americans. If we cut those budgets, say to, we cut it from $800 billion to $200 billion, keeping up the Coast Guard and drug smugglers and delinquents in the United States, etc., organized crime, that $600 billion that we save each year could go a long ways to sustaining Medicare and Social Security for decades. And I think this is part of the great bargain that I propose, that we should form a Social Security Party with an agenda for developing social programs based on the productive forces in the United States, which are real and could prosper once we got the proper investments in place, the increase in consumer power would be a booming domestic economy, and that would also give a stimulus to our overcoming stagnation. So that budget. And the second thing is the Medicare is largely because of the overcharges by hospitals, doctors, pharmaceutical companies, etc. If we had a single-payer system, we could cut our medical bill by 50%. So by restructuring the budget and by initiating a comprehensive health program, just like Richard Nixon proposed back then in 1972 or 73, I beg your pardon, just before Watergate, you begin to wonder whether Watergate was a put-up job to prevent Nixon from, in effect, putting a national health program as part of the social welfare program. Richard Nixon would probably be considered a pinko by his colleagues in the Republican Party today. The Democrats would turn their nose because they're in the pocket of Big Pharma. So let's resurrect Richard Nixon's health program of 1970s. And Ted Kennedy, by the way, voted against it, supposedly for a more comprehensive program. Just before he died, he said that was the biggest mistake he made because it was not possible to implement his plan. He should have voted for Nixon's plan. And that would give us a Medicare program that would be sustainable. And if the budget was rejiggered, we'd have a Social Security program, an extended social insurance program far beyond what exists today, and certainly in the opposite direction from where the bipartisan coalition is proposing.
Oh, indeed, Jim. Pinko Nixon is right. I mean, for a guy who was such a rotten egg in so many ways, it's amazing the left of center, the progressive policies he supported and had, and some of them became law during his administration. But we only remember him for the stuff that we don't want, that we don't like about him. But it's amazing. I mean, there are no Republicans like him around today. I don't think there's a single one in the Congress.
There's no Democrats like him.
I mean, there may be a few, but they have no power, Jim. Certainly the ones that matter, they're as much Republican as Republicans, and that's one of the many dirty secrets. I wanted to make this point. We're getting near the end of the hour. I'll let you finish it up.
No, but go right ahead, Steve. I've spoken quite a bit this morning.
I also covered this in my Wall Street book last year, that if the government, as the Constitution states, if the government controlled its own money, America could have, I wouldn't say limitless, but it could have extensive prosperity, inflation-free. And it happened in colonial America, and I wrote about it in my book. The colonies controlled their own money. They got out from under the Bank of England. For an entire generation, they had prosperity throughout the colonies. They had no inflation, and guess what? They had no taxes. Except for tariffs, I think they had at that time. There were no income taxes. America could have that today if instead of letting the bankers run the money system, which violates Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution, if the U.S. Treasury took it back the way Congress mandates it's supposed to, America could be prosperous like that again. But the name of the game is forget about prosperity. Only for the corporate giants, only for the bankers, only for the warmongers, only for the super rich, to hell with the rest of us. And the dirty game gets dirtier and dirtier. Plus the final hammer, Jim, full-blown tyranny for anybody who sticks their head up and says, we don't like this system. Full-blown tyranny. We're a hair's breadth from it right now. That's the state of today's America.
Well, Steve, I just want to close off. I've been reading your extraordinarily insightful articles on Israel, and I want to add to that. One of the reasons why we don't see enough or hear enough about these crimes that you well document and present is because of the persecution that's carried out by Zionist American Jews. I just heard an incident yesterday of a case where a professor at the local university gave a lecture, one of his lectures on the Middle East, on the problems of Israeli military attacks on Gaza. Some of the Jewish Zionist students denounced the professor. They went home, called their parents, and the parents called the university, and the university came down on that professor through their department chairman. Now, the department chairman happened to be a civil libertarian and believer in free speech and academic freedom, and he defended the professor. But this kind of insidious grassroots McCarthyism is one of the real threats to American democracy and academic freedom. And I noticed the ACLU is finally getting off its haunches and beginning a nationwide legal campaign against this kind of gross persecution. These little police agents that patrol the campuses and classrooms, and any particular criticism only of Israel. If you criticize the U.S. government, you don't get this kind of backbiting, at least in most universities. But if you raise any questions or doubts or cite international law concerning Israel, these little cockroaches come running out and putting their doo-doo in the administration. Most administrations cave into this kind of blackmail and threats, and it's something very serious. And the irony is that the population of American Jews, people that declare American Jews, has declined 30% in the last 10 years. I looked at the census data. It's dropped from 1990 to 3.2 million adults to 2.6 million adults, less than 1% of the U.S. population. But I think one of the reasons more and more people are ceasing to identify themselves as Jews is because the synagogues have become bastions for Israel, and many of these religious Jews don't want to go and wave the flag of Israel when they're there for religious purposes.
Jim, it's so true, and it's so different than the way I grew up. I had a rabbi who I think would be appalled, absolutely appalled at what Israel is doing today, and I can't imagine he would support it in any way. But it's a different world today, Jim. We're out of time. I've got to sign off. I look forward to getting you back next month. I'll send you an email. I wish you, a happy holiday. I hope one year we can have a happy holiday season, Jim.
Yes, we all celebrate
the end
of the year.
I find nothing to be happy about when millions of people are suffering so much. But again, Jim, my great thanks.
Thank you very much for inviting me, Steve, and keep up the superb work you're doing on the internet.
Thank you, Jim.
Outstanding. Outstanding.
Join us this weekend, of course. We're on 1 p.m. Eastern Time, Saturdays and Sundays. Two more top-notch programs. You got to make it a regular habit, right? Tell your friends.
Thank you, Greg.